This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, September 19th. I'm Belle Lin for The Wall Street Journal. Google is making it easier for creators to access artificial intelligence, introducing a new AI generator tool into YouTube for anyone to use. WSJ reporter Anne-Marie Alcantara tells us what that means for app users, including why we could see a lot more AI and AI slop in our YouTube feeds. Then, music streaming service Spotify's rebellion against Apple is working. Following years of efforts by Spotify, Apple's future as a toll taker at the center of the app economy is unclear. But first, YouTube is entering its AI era. The video streaming company is now letting creators use Google's AI video generator inside the platform, giving users the ability to make short videos with just a text prompt, like this one that was prompted by The Wall Street Journal.
Come with me to my 9-to-5 job before I head to a concert later.
Those are the types of short videos that could soon be flooding YouTube feeds. WSJ reporter Anne-Marie Alcantara joins us now to discuss. Anne-Marie, give us a rundown of the top AI features that YouTube is adding to its platform.
So the biggest one is that Veo 3, which was just released in May. It's like Google's AI video generator with sound, and that's coming to YouTube Shorts for free. And then there's other few more features that are coming to YouTube Shorts, like editing with AI or adding an object or motion to a video or even giving it a little stylized look depending on what you're looking for, you know, comic booky and that sort of stuff to your shorts.
And how realistic are the shorts or the videos that are created with Veo 3 on YouTube? In other words, will we be able to tell that they're AI generated?
Like with any AI product that we're using these days, it kind of depends on your prompting. You know, if you are iterating on the prompt or give it a really strong prompt, you'll definitely most likely get better results just because you're being more specific or thinking about the style that you want the video to be in. That being said, the model that YouTube Shorts is using for Veo 3 is a different one that you can usually find on Google's regular products. And the whole point of this custom model is to make sure people can create these videos faster, upload them faster. When you're scrolling on Shorts, you can watch them more easily and there's no lag time. So there is some decrease in quality there, but the actual video itself and what's in it will depend on your prompting.
And will YouTube label that these AI-generated videos are, in fact, created with AI?
Yes, the videos have to be labeled that they're AI-generated in their text, but there's no filter for you to not see these AI videos in your feed.
And what about podcasting? YouTube is the most popular platform for podcast listeners. What's changing for podcasters who are on YouTube as well?
So for podcasters who are mostly focused on audio only, you know, no video, et cetera, they will get suggestions from AI on how to turn that audio into a video, which is very helpful since people are really rapidly consuming video podcasts more and more. And then for those who are using video for their podcast, they'll also get suggestions from AI on which parts of the podcast to turn into clips or shorts and basically increase eyeballs on your content.
And how do you expect users will respond to the introduction of all this AI content on their feeds?
I spoke to one analyst who mentioned people will say that they don't like it and they don't engage with it, but they're still on there watching it, commenting, seeing it, whether they like it or not.
That was WSJ reporter Anne-Marie Alcantara. Coming up, Apple is facing pressure over its iPhone sales, and investors are worried that it is falling behind in AI innovation. But there's another threat to its App Store that's been brewing for years. That's after the break.
Nearly home. Isn't home where we all want to be? Reba here for Realtor.com, the pros' number one most trusted app. A dream home isn't a dream home if it comes with a nightmare commute. That's why Realtor.com has Real Commute, so you can search by drive time. Download the Realtor.com app today, cause you're nearly home. Make it real with Realtor.com.
Pros number one most trusted app based on August 2024 proprietary survey.
Despite the recent announcement of shiny new iPhones, a part of Apple's core business, its lucrative app store, is imperiled because of efforts by Spotify over many years. Bold Names co-host and WSJ columnist Tim Higgins joins us now to discuss the bad blood between Spotify and Apple. The showdown between the two companies is covered in his book, iWar, Fortnite, Elon Musk, Spotify, WeChat, and Laying Siege to Apple's Empire, which was published earlier this week. Tim, tell us how Spotify has been slowly chipping away at Apple's dominance and its brand.
Well, very carefully, and over a long period of time, for more than a decade, the company has plotted and worked, oftentimes behind the scenes, to challenge the power of Apple's role as the gateway to the digital world for so many users with their iPhone and the App Store.
And tell us about this so-called Apple tax. It seems like it's at the heart of a lot of the dispute here. Why do opponents of it really just despise it so much?
Yeah, the opponents of it call it an Apple tax. Apple would not call it a tax. They think it is a fair fee, a slice of the revenue generated in their App Store for digital goods that are consumed in their digital world. They make the argument that they're providing a huge customer base with security and protection. But for a company like Spotify, especially early on, when you think about what this company as a startup was trying to do, it had some huge costs that were hanging over it. And one of that was the money they pay to get those songs. That was a big expense. Another expense really was that 30% fee that they had to pay to Apple. But worse, probably in their mind, was when Apple made the pivot to streaming music with its own service, Apple Music. You remember this in 2015. Apple priced their service, their monthly service, below what Spotify was offering through the Apple App Store. The Apple App Store, a cost of Spotify was 30% more because of that Apple fee. And so Spotify felt like they were being undercut. They felt like they were put into a kind of anti-competitive environment. And they really were not happy about that. And were taking their case to Washington, hoping to get some relief from, if not regulators, lawmakers, and just were not really receiving a lot of warm welcomes there.
And as you write in your story and in your book, going to U.S. regulators didn't quite make a dent in Apple's dominance, but going to the EU made a big difference. What happened?
The U.S. side would come back into the story years later, but for Spotify, they made the strategic play of going to Europe. Remember, Spotify is a company that comes out of Europe, and the EU has a powerful antitrust regulator and a history being aggressive, especially against big U.S. companies, in particular U.S. tech companies. And it comes at a time when Apple was already in the crosshairs of the EU's antitrust office. The EU, the European Commission, ultimately fined Apple something like $2 billion for the way it was treating streaming music services in its app economy.
What did Apple have to say about your reporting? What's its stance on all this?
Apple is incredibly frustrated with some of these players feeling, and they've said this quite a bit, that they feel like Spotify is essentially a freeloader that they haven't been paying for a long time because they pulled out of allowing users to upgrade to premium subscriptions within the Apple app economy. You used to have to go to your computer to do it, and that was to avoid that Apple fee. And so essentially Apple is pointing out that Spotify has a huge business, has got access to all these people, has really built an ecosystem on top of their business, and they're not paying for it. And they think that's unfair for themselves. They also think and argue it's unfair for the other companies that are playing by the rules.
It might be tempting for us consumers, us users, to dismiss this as bickering between our big tech companies. But is there and will there be an impact on us, on users, as a result of how this all plays out?
You get to the point that sometimes it's hard for the user to dial into this issue because it's so much like billionaires fighting trillionaires over pennies of commission, right? But it is also a really an American story, if you think about it. Apple created a new world in a lot of ways with the app economy. And these colonists, if you will, created their own businesses and grew up in it and benefited from it. But they kind of had their own Boston Tea Party moment, feeling like Apple was overreaching or being ultra-aggressive or too aggressive. And they kind of rebelled. It definitely gets at a classic tech cycle that we see in the U.S. in particular. A technology company rises with success, becomes super powerful, and then its rivals turn to regulatory efforts to try to even the playing field, if you will, and it becomes a distraction. We saw that with Microsoft, its peak of its previous power, concerns that it was a monopoly, the Department of Justice going after it, regulators in Europe going after it. And Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates and others at that company who were running things at that time or involved in things at that time have said it was that those fights a generation ago were a distraction. They missed out on the next big thing, like mobile computing, the rise of the iPhone, because they were distracted. And you have to wonder, as you watch Apple now, as it struggles to develop artificial intelligence, at least in the mind of investors, maybe Apple did get distracted in the last few years.
That was Bold Names co-host and WSJ columnist Tim Higgins. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang. Logging off for the weekend, I'm your host, Belle Lin. Additional support this week from Zoe Culkin. Jessica Fenton and Michael Lavelle wrote our theme music. Our supervising producer is Melanie Roy. Our development producer is Aisha El Muslim. Chris Sinsley is the deputy editor. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back later this morning with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.
Boardrooms love buzzwords. AI, climate, resilience.
But what do they actually mean for CFOs and execs trying to survive the next earnings call?
That's where the pre-read comes in.
Real experts and real talk.
Subscribe to the pre-read, presented by Workiva.